They're called God's waiting room. They're the last move that most people make. They are nursing homes. The way most of us look at nursing homes is akin to a hospice, basically a place where people go to die. But most of the people that populate nursing homes are not, in fact, terminally ill, not about to take their last breath, not in a vegetative state. So why do we view nursing homes and the people in them in the way that we do? Our next guest says we've got it all wrong, and we should be supporting nursing home staff to enable the residents and their families to enjoy their time there as much as you can. He says we also shouldn't stifle or overly coddle those in nursing homes, and that a good quality of life requires a certain degree of autonomy. Joseph Ibrahim is a professor at the Health Law and Ageing Research Institute in the Department of Forensic Medicine at Monash University. He joins us today from Ballarat. Joseph Ibrahim, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thanks, Amanda.
Well, you don't go there to die, but, you don't spend very long there. There was, in the meantime, less than 3 years you might spend in a nursing home.
That's right. So the statistics about how long you live once you enter a nursing home is most people will be there for around 3 years. Your listeners will have had family that have either lived for a shorter or a longer time. What I wanted to highlight was that there's time on your side. 3 years is a long time.
And it's a long time to be bored, isn't it?
It is. And I think in 3 years you can complete an undergraduate degree. There's a lot of things you can do. And our concept and social construct that you go to a nursing home and the next step is that you're dead isn't really, isn't helpful and isn't true. And I don't think we're doing enough to make those last few years as enjoyable and as happy as possible. I think we tend to run away from issues to do with death and dying, and we also run away from disability and ageing.
Mm. Well, what sort of things could we do to make the nursing home experience a much better one?
Well, there's clearly examples that the listeners would have heard or seen about from Europe, where there's younger people in sharing housing with older people. The main issue that I wanted to raise was allowing people to take chances, allowing people to do things that they want to do, rather than saying that you're here and you have to be safe. So you can't go out because you might fall. You can't eat your favourite food in case you choke on it. You can't smoke because it's dangerous in terms of secondary smoke. You can't go out because we don't know whether you'll find your way back. We tend to treat older people like children in kinder, that we're so worried that something's going to happen to them, we don't ever actually allow anything good to happen.
So really, it's a one-size-fits-all. Once you get there, you're going to fit in with this regime and it's going to be boring. I mean, I think you might have raised the example, or someone you knew did, of an ageing parent that was a really good bridge player. Really good bridge player. I don't understand that, but fair enough. And then was reduced to sort of bingo and lotto.
Well, I think that's the problem whenever you get any institutional or group style living, that you're bound by the rules of that. And I don't think it's fair that you go back to a boarding school type living arrangement because you're older or because you need care. I think we don't individualise the care enough. I think the nursing home staff do their best, but they've got limited means. And the test of whether we believe life is worth living and whether risks are allowed to be taken is what do we do when something goes wrong. And by that I mean is we're happy for people to do things as long as they stay safe. The question is when something goes wrong, and if someone falls because you've allowed them to walk alone because that's what they want to do, There's then an investigation into that. There's then culpability, or people start blaming.
So what's the way out of that? I mean, I was going to ask you this very point. You know, you've got an ageing mother in a nursing home who's a bit cantankerous and says, get away, I want to walk on my own, falls over and breaks a hip. You sort of expect the family to say, well, why weren't you looking after her?
And that's typically what happens, and everyone feels bad.
But isn't that reasonable? Isn't that a reasonable thing to say?
It's reasonable, but I don't think it's a fair thing, and it's not necessarily a fair thing to say based on what the person actually wants. So if I want to go for a walk, or if I want to stay out late, you might not like that, but it's my life and I should have a choice into how I live that. And if the only thing that gives me joy is to be outside walking alone, and there isn't much other options for me, then I think that we need to respect that, and we need to then support and explain to nursing home staff and everyone else that when something goes wrong, we've got your back if you've behaved reasonably. So I don't think we take enough risks. We're so safety conscious that we're not taking any risks at all. I'm not saying, as some listeners tend to think, that it should be a free-for-all and everyone gets to do whatever the hell they like. It's about trying to find that balance. And we've tipped so far to being you're old, frail, you can't decide anything for yourself. We're going to feed and water you and keep you warm and our job is done. As a society, we need to be saying it's all right to take risks. It's all right to die doing something that you like because that's what you like. I think the tragic case of the deaths that have occurred with sort of mountaineers or people doing adventure travel, everyone's really distressed by the deaths, and it's very sad when those younger people die. But everyone also, as a society, says, well, they died doing something they loved. They were living life to the fullest. And so we praise that in younger people, but we don't support older people to live their life to the fullest, to take the risks that might lead to harm for them.
You do make a point that what many people see as a good death, that is, quiet, peaceful, pain-free, loved ones around you, most people be saying, yeah, that's right, that's a good death. What you say is, but that's not a good life.
That's correct. And I think our focus and our emphasis is about making sure that we die nicely, that we don't think about, I don't need to prepare 3 years to die nicely. You know, so if
not
I'm,
fair enough.
and so we do want people to have a good death, but sometimes to live an exciting life, to live a life that you want, the price of that might be a death that isn't so nice. It might be a death that's traumatic at the end. And my question then is, what would you rather do? Would you rather sit and wait for death to come, and I'm sitting here day after day and I'm all prepped for it? Or do you want to be out doing something, and if you do fall, if you do choke on a food that's your favourite, if you do get lost wandering out, why is that so terrible? The people that go around the world and get lost at sea, all of those people that are chasing life don't die a good death. They die in the way that we understand it. They die a death living their life.
I'm talking to Professor Joseph Ibrahim about life in a nursing home and why it should be much better than it is. Now, let me ask you about people in nursing homes. Have there been studies of the type of drugs they're on before they go in and when they're there? Because one does hear time and time again, people go into a nursing home with not a very high drug intake, and it's not long before they've got a high drug intake, which will include some calm-me-downs, because people get agitated, bored, as you say, that's the very point you're making, completely bored. And one way to resolve that issue is to whack them on some calm-me-downs. Have you heard that?
So you're right, there are studies. I think what's reassuring is that practice has changed enormously in the last 20 years, and doctors, staff, families are all aware of the use of antipsychotic or calming medication, and their use generally, I believe, has declined, and there's significant training and policy direction about reducing that. The other issue is that those drugs don't actually work in treating the underlying problem. So antipsychotic or calming agents are really important for people who have significant mental illness or distress, but they don't treat boredom. And the argument I guess we're trying to make now is that we've moved from the days where people used to be locked up or physically restrained, and we're now looking at reducing the use of drugs, but we haven't gone to the next step about saying what makes life worthwhile for you when you're old. What people seek is joy in their life. Joy comes from sharing, precious moments, things that you enjoy, be it music, be it outside watching a sunset, being going for a long walk. protecting people by having three strangers or staff members with you doesn't give you that same measure of joy or achievement. And I think that for some people, walking down a garden path is the same as climbing Everest. They've got Parkinson's disease, they've got a four-wheel walker, they're slow, they've fallen a number of times, but sometimes they just want to be by themselves and smell the roses. They don't want someone hovering over them.
I've had, in a sense, that experience. My mother, now deceased, had a stroke and managed to live at home with the help of carers for a fair while, but unkindly, she used to refer to them as her paid enemies. And when I had a go at her one day and said, look, that's a bit rough, you know, people can hear you saying that. And she said, well, you live in a house, your house, or anywhere where there's someone hovering over you all the time. You can't have a discussion, you can't, you know, pass wind, whatever. You can't just be yourself without someone knowing every you know, drop of food that you've eaten, every ounce of drink that you've had, every bit of energy you've expended, the paid carer knows about.
I think you've summarised that beautifully. And what I'd like us to be able to do as a society is say that when we've provided the freedom for someone to do that and it goes wrong, we shouldn't be jumping up and down and saying that they've received bad care or that people have been negligent. We should be able to say, well, we knew that mum or dad wanted to go for a walk by themselves. We knew that they'd rather sit on the toilet by themselves and not be watched, knowing that they might fall because they want to preserve their dignity. And when something bad happens, that we can sit back and look at that rationally and sensibly and say, it's not what we wanted to happen, but we understand that we can't protect people if they're to enjoy their life. And again, I use the example with children. When kids are growing up, you don't always get to choose their friends or who they go out with. Mm. You hope they'll enjoy themselves. You give them some freedom. And you have to live with those consequences. And it's the same thing when your parents are older. They have to be given some level of freedom so that they feel in control of their life. And when you're 90 and you know that death is around the corner, every day is precious. You don't want to give something up today because you're not sure that it's going to be there tomorrow. And I think that we still work and think as if your life is over once you get old, and once you get into a nursing home, then our responsibility is to keep you safe, warm and fed, and if we do that, we can all sleep well at night. I'm saying that we should be the ones worrying about what happens, and the people that have little time left should be trying to enjoy their life as best they can.
Well, I think that's a great proposition. And when you look at it, the figures, and say that it's nearly 3 years you spend in a nursing home, why would you want your last 3 years to be sitting around doing nothing, waiting for death to come? You're quite right. You might want to get out and have a walk and fall over and do a whole range of other things. It is going to require a rethink by people in the nursing homes, by families, and perhaps by governments. But it's worth having a rethink. Why make the last 3 years the worst you have? Thanks very much for joining us.
Norris, thank you, Amanda.
That was Professor Joseph Ibrahim at the Health, Law and Ageing Research Unit in the Department of Forensic Medicine at Monash University, talking to us about nursing homes and how they can be improved.